Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line, as always, is Jim Ozarski, Milwaukee Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We've got quite a few things to discuss. Giannis's injury is lingering on. He has not played in the last couple games. Jrue Holiday has filled the void very, very nicely. What a week for Jrue Holiday. He's NBA Eastern Conference Player of the Week. He is the he signs a contract extension, which we have yet to talk about. A very lucrative 4-year deal to stay in Milwaukee as long as Giannis is going to be in Milwaukee. Pretty much, it's going to be those two guys and Chris Middleton for the foreseeable future. We will obviously talk about that and. There's more at the end of this episode. We'll have a brief conversation that Jim conducted with George Karl, none other than the head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks back in the early 2000s. Of course, that 2001 season, which is now celebrating its 20th anniversary, the year the Bucks went to the Eastern Conference Finals, an oasis in a desert of rough Bucks seasons, or at least uninspiring Bucks seasons, I guess you could say. They were fine for a couple years before that, and maybe you could say a couple years after that, but that 2001 season was very, very special for Milwaukee sports fans, and George Karl talks about some of his experiences during that time. Of course, the controversy surrounding the Eastern Conference Finals. Bucks fans know what we're talking about, so stick around later in the show for that. But Jim, we got some Bucks to talk about. Where should we start? Should we start with Jrue Holiday, who is probably the main story, or Giannis, who's been out now a couple games, and it's starting to get a little concerning that this knee injury he has might be kind of a big deal.
Yeah, let's start there, JR, just because as we record this, it seems unlikely that he will play in the front end of a back-to-back here against the Dallas Mavericks. It kind of makes me wonder if it's worth him playing the next night in Pfizer form against Charlotte as well. Maybe that's the point. Maybe, they're going to start the Giannis back-to-back management, where they're kind of picking this one against Dallas to sit out, and he will be good to go against Charlotte. But yeah, JR, missed the game against Sacramento, missed the game against Golden State. The Bucks split those games. Look, as a recap for fans, he sprained it March 20th against San Antonio. Did not play against Indiana on March 22nd, came back to play the two games against Boston at Fiserv, and I think, JR, most fans would think he didn't look good, didn't look normal, missed the game against the Knicks, came back, played both games against LA, and really where this flared up, JR, was pregame against Portland. Clearly the NBA broadcast showed, didn't feel right, had to go sit down actually, after feeling that knee flare up, comes back, plays, scores 47 points, but clearly things have not been right. And, I don't know, where's your concern level there? I mean, we're talking, that's 1, 2, 3, 4 games missed. This will be game 5 if he doesn't play against the Mavericks. That's a sprain that has not healed properly, and now they're we need to maybe take time off here before it gets too late to do so.
Yeah, that Blazers game is a weird thing to consider, because like you said, 47 points, he was 18 of 21 shooting from the field. I mean, he was dominant. He was undeniably the best player on the floor in a game against a very good team on the road that the Bucks won handily, 127-109 over the Blazers. I kind of think one of the more impressive showings of the year. So yeah, you had that pregame footage and everyone was a little concerned, but then he goes out and dominates. And that's not uncommon in Giannis's career, history. He's had injuries before and looked good anyway. He's just that good of a player. But sprains are, those are tiny tears. Like there's nothing to really mess around with when you're talking about sprains. And I have to think, the Bucks, we talked about this last week, their positioning hasn't really changed in the standings. They are third in the Eastern Conference. They haven't gained any ground. They did briefly on the Nets and Sixers before losing to Golden State. They're back now to three games out, but yet six games ahead of Charlotte. So they're nestled into this three spot pretty tightly. Of course, they want to get to the top spot in the East, and we talked about that last week. We could talk about it again. Like, is that something worth pursuing? If it means putting a guy out there who's not 100%, I do think if he does not play against Charlotte at home, against that team right now that's in the fourth spot, you know, the Eastern Conference foe that is legitimate, I think you have to say, okay, this could be a longer term thing. But who knows? With the lack of access, I don't know if we'll ever really get a handle on how significant the injury is or how severe, except based on what you see, you know, game to game, you know, if he's playing. Obviously, they feel comfortable with him being out there. But I do think if he had his druthers, he would have played against Golden State, against his friend Steph Curry, in a game where the Bucks blew it down the stretch in the fourth quarter, where they didn't have their closer. It has shown up both of the last two games. They happen to beat the Kings, hold on to beat the Kings by a point. They end up losing to Golden State by a point, almost assuredly, because they didn't have their best player down the stretch. So I'd be nervous about it for sure. I think you have a little more time before you have to consider what it means for the Bucks' playoff aspirations. There's still plenty of time to feel like that's you know, they're going to the playoffs. They'll be a top three team. They should feel comfortable that way. But definitely something I know Bucks Nation is paying attention to at this point.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how they manage this. You know, they play a handful of more back to backs. The Brooklyn series is one of those mini series. They play two and three nights against the 76ers, both at home, which help. So that'll be interesting, JR. Like, if as they go, they just decide, you know, look, it is about the playoffs and you know, try to just do what they can as they go the rest of the way. I tend to be, as someone who's had, you know, a half a dozen ligaments and cartilages and all those things repaired and fixed and removed in my knees, I tend to be one of those more conservative type of knee observers, if you will. I think, you know, they, in my opinion, you know, they probably should have had him not play against Boston, you know, and maybe even against LA, and he's just coming back now, and we're not even having this conversation. But if the decision now is, okay, miss, let's just say four games, you know, let's take Dallas and Charlotte off the table, and that turns out to be 8 days, like, I think that's probably smart, you know, because then you can maybe accomplish all your goals still, which is get out of that three seed and you know, still feel like you're finding a cohesive rhythm. Because look, JR, PJ Tucker still hasn't played. He's been out since March 24th. You know, Jeff, so that means either Pat Connaughton's been starting, Bobby Portis has been starting for Giannis, PJ Tucker's not in, Jeff Teague just got here. Like, you're going to want your top nine players to have played games together before you play Miami or Atlanta or whomever in the first round of the playoffs. And I think yes, those guys are veterans, but I think you still want them all to have some run together, you know, before it matters. At least, I don't think it has to be 20 games, but you like to at least think 10, 12, 15 at the end of the year. I think that'll be important.
Yeah, the only question I have there is Thanasis a top five player or a top three player on this team? won't talk as much about him today.
But. No Mamadi? No, you lost Mamadi already, JR?
I mean, you know that meme where the guy is walking with the one girlfriend but is looking over his shoulder at the woman who's passing by, and the meme always indicates what those things are? So Mamadi Thanasis, maybe for some Bucks fans, it's possible. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's been playing well again, even though he's an interesting guy to watch. Sometimes his offensive possessions are very adventurous, but he still has had some pretty good showings. But let's talk about another guy who is really kind of become the beating heart of this Bucks team, and that's Drew Holiday. He signs a 4-year contract extension worth at least $134 million if he exercises his option for that final season. He is, honestly, Jim, he's a joy to watch. Like, the way he controls things, his defense, his shot, his quick shot. Anecdotally, I haven't even looked this up, it seems like maybe he turns the ball over a few times, a bit, but I mean, what point guard won't? He is awesome. He's awesome. And the Bucks probably weren't going to trade for him, knowing that he was coming up to a situation where he could opt out, without having some assurances or at least some pretty good idea that they could sign him long term. So they've done that. He and Giannis will be here for the next 4 seasons after this, and that's that looks like a pretty, you know, assuming both those guys are healthy, like we've talked about, that's a pretty good cocktail. I think this is a great deal for Milwaukee. It's certainly on the front end, it is. Anytime you sign a veteran player who's over the age of 30, there's a tendency for people to start looking at the back end of that deal and decide, well, is he going to be good in 4 years? Is that going to become a albatross around this organization in a salary cap league in 4 years? I feel like he's the type of player who's, you know, like a Chris Paul. I don't think he's going to fall off a cliff, but there's absolutely no way to tell how a player is going to age. So what as you look at this contract, what do you think? What are some of your observations?
Yes, I mean you were right on in that, you know, the Bucks, this had to be done. I mean, we wrote about this at the end of February when the extension window opened. You don't trade multiple first round picks, multiple first round swaps, Eric Bledsoe, George Hill. You don't. John Horst didn't make that deal without telling ownership, you're gonna have to pay this man at least $134.9 million, which was the max base salary. You know, maybe at the time they didn't know they could push it to 160 with potential incentives. I'm sure they did. I mean, there's a whole cap room, you know, full of smart people who know that math. So they went into it knowing that. It was just a matter of recruiting Drew Holiday to sign that deal. And, you know, we talked to ESPN insider Bobby Marks on this one, former GM of the Nets, salary cap expert, and he said, look, it's easier to recruit a guy in-house than it is letting him get to free agency, and then he gets to do the whirlwind tour and going to Dallas and L.A. and Brooklyn. And, you know, he gets to be with your team, in your facilities, on your planes, all that stuff. And, look, Drew Holiday said that stuff mattered. You know, the impression the Bucks made on his wife, Lauren, on him personally as a father. I mean, you know, maybe they sent everybody to New Orleans to move him up. I don't know. But that impression was made. And then on the court, you know, Holiday said from the very beginning that the type of player Drew Holiday is, the type of player Chris Middleton is, it made the on-court fit come easy. And the fact that those guys had been pushing him of late, JR, to be more aggressive, to go get yours. Look, he's averaging over almost 24 points a game, 7 assists, almost 5 rebounds the month of April. Actually going back to that Spurs game, you know, 9. And not that a point guard needs to have those crazy numbers, but the fact that they wanted him to go get it, they wanted him to take a more sort of dominant role when Giannis was out, I think probably helped. So yeah, he could, and here's the thing, someone listening to this, he could have signed more money. This wasn't the Giannis situation. You know, if he went to free agency, the way the cap math works, he could have made more guaranteed money going forward. So, you know, for once, JR, a star player, if you will, took less money to sign to extend in Milwaukee. And, you know, that's a big deal, I think, symbolically. Now, going forward, yeah, I don't know if point guards are the new, you know, if they're the quarterbacks of the NFL. Like, if the way the game is played now allows those guys to age a little more gracefully. He made a joke where he said, like, his knees are different. He doesn't jump around and dunk like Dante DiVincenzo anymore. But that also means, you know, you see Drew Holiday hit the floor to make a steal, right? Like in Memphis. Yeah. Like he picks and chooses his spots. you know, he's not like Giannis. Giannis is 26. You know, Drew Holiday's not like crashing to the court on every attack at the rim. That's 30 years old, right? There's a guy who kind of understands that's maybe not the best thing to do at his age. So you're right. We'll see how it plays out. But I think in general, JR, it's a good thing. Maybe he ages a little better. And yeah, I think if they can get to the finals, of course, win a title in the next 2-3 years, if it's looking bad in 23-24, I think Bucks fans will, you know, might be more accepting of it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I get, you know, he is 30, but it's not like he's 34, right? So
right.
These 4 years, it's not the absolute twilight of his career necessarily. It's not like he's going to be in his 40s by the end of this contract. And you know, you mentioned his wife, Lauren, also herself a world-class athlete, and they've already made some inroads in Milwaukee. And the idea, and so the idea of him making more money, I mean, a lot of that money is going to, not a lot, but they're going to take care of the community. They've shown a commitment to the community they live in, whether that was in New Orleans or whether that's in Milwaukee. And I do think it says a lot that a guy who just got here, who's only been here a few months, is willing to make that commitment. I'm sure he's making it because he gets to play with two very good all-star players in Giannis and Chris Middleton, but also because clearly he saw something here, and that says something. That's not just a guy who's had roots here for 6 years willing to stay. That's somebody who's new here and thinking, yeah, I like what I see after a few months. Let's do this. So I do think that bodes well for the future. Ring chasers like Jeff Teague are going to want to come to play for this Bucks team every single year. Every single year, they're going to have their pick of guys who are buyouts or, you know, free agents are going to be attracted to Milwaukee. That's a key situation. Holiday goes on, ends up being, you mentioned some of his numbers, player of the week, which I thought was awfully appropriate. He gets paid, you know, in addition to getting paid, he's playing pretty good basketball. I thought that part of the problem Anthony Davis had with New Orleans is that he didn't have any talent around him. I'm trying to figure out why Drew Holiday wasn't already a superstar. I mean, maybe what you're saying is accurate, that he's being encouraged to sort of be more aggressive and be more present as an offensive player. But, like, I mean, what shouldn't Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday have taken over basketball? Why was that team not a top five team in the West? I'm really confused.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, look, Holiday's, I guess you could say, you know, when he was hitting his prime in New Orleans, I mean, his last three seasons now, I guess Anthony Davis has been in LA now in that window. I mean, he was almost a 20 point a game scorer. You know, you're right. They just, I mean, the West obviously on a night to night basis is a
tougher, right?
Is a tougher deal. I mean, are you trying to say that the two games that Axel Toupain, current Buck star, did not help Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis? No, it's an unfair shot at Axel. I guess they tried. They signed, remember, the DeMarcus Cousins attempt? You know, I mean, Cousins only played 17 games.
Every team in the NBA has made a DeMarcus Cousins attempt at this point.
Yeah, and maybe that's part of it. I mean, Eric Gordon, you know, I guess they tried that. He got hurt. You know, Kendrick Perkins ended up there. I mean, maybe that's one of the reasons David Griffin's now the GM too, JR. I mean, you know, they had a few years ago, I mean, you're going to go all the way back to 14-15. They were, you know, a top five team in their division. I mean, look, they tried with Austin Rivers at the start of his career for Bucks fans who are, hey, Austin Rivers. I mean, he came in with Anthony Davis. Yeah, it just never, I don't, it just looks like, you know, Dell Demps didn't put that together the right way. And Anthony Davis just was like, look, that's just not going to happen here. And yeah, maybe Drew Holiday and him, like, they're personally, they are really good friends. Like, Anthony Davis could not wait to talk about him and Lauren when he was traded here and what they meant to him personally, professionally, but maybe it just wasn't the same kind of vibe, and Dell Demps didn't do the things John Horst could do. And look, for as good as Anthony Davis is, JR, he's not an MVP. He's not Giannis. And he went to LA to play with that guy. And so maybe that's the difference, you know?
Yeah, you could be right.
Yeah, Anthony Davis maybe at that point in his career wasn't a guy like Giannis and Drew Holiday. And look, maybe Holiday is the better third man. You know, Chris, you know, we could get into this on another pod, JR. I mean, Chris Middleton's gotten a lot of, I don't want to call it hate, but it's drifted back into the Chris Middleton, like, oh, he turns the ball over too much, can't create his own shot too much. But, like, if you actually zoom out on what he does in context of the league, it's still something that, like, the list is LeBron, Luka, and, like, Joker. Like, it's some ridiculous – you know what I'm saying, JR? So I think, you know, Bucks fans, it's almost like the they see too much of him to understand, like, the global context of where Chris Middleton fits offensively. So maybe maybe that's part of it too, where Drew Holiday comes in and he's not being asked to shoulder such a load on both ends of the court. Like, if he scores 17 but has three steals, like, that's good enough. Where maybe in New Orleans, it wasn't.
Actually, let's talk a little bit more about Chris Middleton. And you mentioned Austin Rivers, which makes me lead back to Jeff Teague. We'll get there too. But I saw a tweet last night from Zach Cram of The Ringer. He's an NBA writer, he writes for other sports as well, baseball as well. But he has a stat of the day that he posts. And his stat was this: with Giannis off the floor this season, Chris Middleton is averaging 28-6-6 per 36 minutes. For context, the only players doing that overall are Giannis and Luka. Also, Middleton is shooting 50-42-89 in those minutes, so just about a 50-40-90 season. Again, this is with Giannis off the floor. His conclusion, an absolute offensive star. I agree with you. I think Chris Middleton, and Middleton will probably tell you that he hasn't necessarily been on a run, on a hot streak lately. He did have that bad turnover against Golden State at the end of that game. I do think there is a lot of hand-wringing about that game, which was a loss that the Bucks should not have taken, but ultimately, I really struggle to feel like that's an important game in the grand scheme of things. Giannis off the floor, West Coast opponent. I think this West Coast trip is a little bit about survival, and the Bucks have done that so far, and will do that regardless of what happens in Dallas against Luka. But I think we're back to the point where Middleton gets a little underestimated because Giannis is doing MVP things. Drew Holiday is the new flavor and looks awesome. So Chris Middleton logically drifts down to the third guy in the conversation, and if he's not putting up all-star nights every single night, he gets sort of the unfair gaze. I myself did not realize that Middleton's numbers were so good with Giannis off the floor. I mean, he is a guy who is probably deferring a little bit his ability, his offensive contributions because of the guys around him, and you know, just if you want to expound on it, I think you're right. I think Chris Middleton is, again, getting some unfair treatment. The guy's really, really good.
Yeah, and it's a perspective, again, in town of what he is and isn't. I mean, he's a 6'8 scoring wing. Yeah, he's going to turn the ball over, and Drew Holiday has done that as well, probably a little too much. Mike Budenholzer finally admitted that, you know, that they've probably given the ball away on a regular basis. So, you know,
a lot of lob passes into the paint that have gone poorly, you know?
Yeah. I think fans get frustrated at seeing Chris Middleton on the floor, you know, and someone's stealing the ball from him. That's going to happen. Like, Drew Holiday, Dante DiVincenzo, Giannis even are better, like, ball handlers. But again, a guy that plays 35 minutes a game, I mean, that's what happens when you want these guys to play more minutes, which is what they're doing. Like, there's more chances for turnovers. And, yeah, he has come down off of that first quarter of the season where he was in that exclusive, like, 50-40-90 club. Malcolm Brogdon did it once. It's a hard thing to do. Only 8 players have done in NBA history or something like that. So, sure, that's come down. But, yeah, JR, it's I think that also coincides with, you know, Drew Holiday. Kind of his numbers kind of creeping up a little bit as well. And yeah, I think come playoff time, look, the 7 seconds in Golden State didn't go well. You know, Middleton says, look, it was a totally bad inbound pass on my part. And of course, you know, Bucks Twitter, because he's a bad passer. Here's the thing to to file away. Drew Holiday has been the one doing those half-court inbounds late in games. Going all the way back to Boston when he had the lob to Giannis that led to the free throws that lost. Other than Phoenix, I think Dante DiVincenzo was in because Drew Holiday was in the protocol. What does that mean? That means that, yes, Middleton was going to be an option to get the ball back, but potentially Drew Holiday could have ran ISO to win the game one-on-one in the final 7 seconds without Giannis. He was going to have that chance, that choice. And I think that's a change, right, JR? Like that's Mike Budenholzer creating another option. And maybe if Giannis is back on the court, Drew Holiday's the one inbounding. But to me, I don't know. Maybe Pat Connaughton's the next one in, and that's a whole other conversation. Or maybe it's Dante DiVincenzo. Like, I don't know. I think you're seeing this team evolve in the late stages. You're seeing the three of them evolve in the late stages. If Giannis is out, foul trouble, knee injury, whatever it may be, Middleton and Holiday evolve. And I think that means good things for the Bucks, one way or the other.
I want to go back and correct something I said. I'd mentioned anecdotally I thought Holiday turned the ball over. 2.1 turnovers per game is really quite good. It would be a career best for him, in addition to the fact that he's bringing 1.8 steals per game, which is second in the NBA behind Jimmy Butler. So I don't want to misrepresent it. Drew Holiday does not turn the ball over that much. He is a very good point guard in that regard as well, and also takes the ball away quite a bit.
You're not wrong though. I mean, I think he had like 8 against Golden State, and there was a game, one of the games against Boston, it was way up there. So no, I mean, like your short-term memory is correct. Like he has had a couple like kind of clunkers in that regard in recent times.
Yeah. Bucks did get some good news related to their depth. Two things, I think. Jeff Teague, as I mentioned before, has looked very good. I said, well, maybe he could score 15 points in a game. I didn't mean 15 points a game. I meant 15 points in a game. And he definitely looks like that player. If you need a guy who can give you a little bit of a burst, Jeff Teague has fit right in pretty quickly, which is encouraging. And even though our speculation pointed to the fact that, particularly my speculation, that Bobby Portis was almost certainly a guy who had gotten a positive COVID test, he was back a lot sooner than I think we could have envisioned. Makes it seem like maybe he was just a close contact and was just quarantining. So he comes back and is able to contribute pretty quickly. So even with Giannis being out, the Bucks are much closer to full strength. It's just Giannis and PJ Tucker at this point. What have you seen from Jeff Teague? And I mean, you can touch on Portis too if you want, but Jeff Teague looks like... I mean, to me, it looks like a guy who can really fit in here.
Yeah, and that was the thought, obviously, right? Oh, he played for Mike Budenholzer. There's familiarity with the offense. The offense is a little different. Terminology has changed. He made a joke that he at least wants to know the name of one play and how it runs. And I think he finally got that down. And I think, you know, the concern for Bucks fans was – you know, sort of seeing on Celtics Twitter, social media, Jeff Teague wasn't playing very well, didn't look great. I think against the Bucks, the two games to that point before the trade, or three games, I mean, Jeff Teague actually played pretty well. You had even, I think, joked about that, JR, when we talked about him or Austin Rivers, and it was like, well, Teague has kind of shown out. I think he does fit well. You know, he's been to an Eastern Conference Finals with Budenholzer running the show. So I think, you know, if there is crunch time concerns over Pat Connaughton or even Dante DiVincenzo on the offensive end, okay, Jeff T can play and you feel good about the ball handling, the decision making. Guy who's played a bunch of playoff games. And I think on a broader level, you mentioned Bobby Portis. Something he said was, look, you know, Milwaukee's not as sexy as LA or Brooklyn. However, you know, the big three are going to get guys to come in like Jeff Teague. Teague said he had other options, but he wanted to come to Milwaukee. And, you know, I think word's going to circulate. I think certain players are always going to gravitate to certain places. that doesn't mean good players aren't going to come to the Bucks. And I think honestly, JR, now they haven't always worked out, but the Bucks have gotten quite a few players in the buyout market. They may not have the resume of a Blake Griffin, but since this whole buyout thing has started the last few years, they've had their fair share. So yeah, I think Jeff Teague is part of that, and Portis, not a buyout guy, but you know, is part of that group of like the 1 year plus options. Like those are the margins they're going to have to operate under. And you know, I think Teague is going to be a fit. And yeah, it's just a matter of, okay, PJ Tucker get healthy, Giannis get healthy, figure out that top 10 rotation, that top nine rotation. Sorry, Thanasis and Mamadi. In crunch time, you guys maybe aren't part of that, but they need to figure that out. And Jeff Teague, I think you're right. In shorter usage time, might actually end up being a better addition than he looked like he was in Boston.
Last check, Austin Rivers was still not signed. He's still out there as a free agent. There's a couple other guys out there. Yeah. I don't know for sure as we record this where like Gerald Green and Glenn Robinson III are at. I do know Ben McLemore was somebody that it sounds like the Bucks might have had interest in before he signed elsewhere. So maybe the Bucks are still looking to fill this final roster spot. I'm guessing they are. Maybe it's wise to wait a little bit and see where the injury concerns roll in and figure it out then positionally. But do you imagine the Bucks are going to make one more move here?
Yeah, I think they'll kick the tires. I mean, the thing to remember for the fans there is the Jrue Holiday money is all obviously that extension starts next year. It's not like football where you can kind of sign in season extensions and move cap room around. I mean, the NBA doesn't work that way. So there's still, we don't know Jeff Teague's details on his buyout, like how much they paid him and kind of what's in there. So really, the longer they wait, the less money in their proration they have to spend. Clearly if other guys are sitting there, like, no one else is really rushing to sign them either on the buyout market. So maybe you're not in that sort of competition. Like maybe Jeff Teague had to get thrown a few thousand dollars extra. So yeah, I think they'll kick the tires. And I think your point of waiting to see where they may have some injury issues, continuing injury issues, shooting from beyond three, that all probably plays into it as well.
I think that's all we got, Jim. I do want to get to this interview with George Karl that we teased at the beginning. Any last thoughts before we head to that conversation you had with George?
Yeah, so of course, Bucks fans of a certain age will know 20 years ago, the Bucks, helmed by George Karl in 2000-2001, made a run to the Eastern Conference Finals. And that was a special team, I think, for Bucks fans and Bucks history. You know, the squad from a few years ago with Giannis, that was the first, right, JR, to have reached that point in that period of time. And George was an interesting guy. He doesn't mince words. He talks about managing the big three, pulls no punches there. Also pulls no punches with how he felt the end of that Sixer series went. I mean, look, it is history. There's no surprises here. Scott Williams was suspended sort of retroactively after game six, was unavailable in game seven. George does admit a coaching mistake in here, something he maybe should have done differently to help his team win in game seven. I thought that was interesting. And then, of course, JR, you know, he talks about the Bradley Center and the city of Milwaukee in that time and what that sounded like and felt like, which again, I think for Bucks fans who maybe only know of the end of the BC and like the push for the Fiserv and all the bad things about that arena. At least in that year, I think George says, hey, when you win, good things happen and stadiums can get loud. So I thought that was interesting as well. Oh, and also, another series in that playoff run that is one of his all time favorites. That's maybe a little forgotten. He mentions that as well.
Yes, that Hornets series, that seven gamer. A lot of people forget about that one because of what transpired after. But that was a great, great series. Jamal Mashburn and the like. They were it was tough. It was tough to get past that. But he like you said, he mentions that. And then, of course, the conspiracy to follow in the well, after this interview, let's come back. I want to talk briefly about how history remembers that 2001 season before we finally let go. But let's play it. Here's Jim's interview with very fun interview with George Karl, former coach of the Milwaukee Bucks.
Does Milwaukee still, does that year hold anything special for you in terms of what you guys did?
Well, you know, I love that year. I mean, I still think the streets of Milwaukee were as loud and as excited and as motivated by basketball than any city I've been in. I mean, the building was crazy. The streets were in the playoffs, especially the Philly series, but also the Charlotte series. I mean, we just had two, I think, you know, the Charlotte and the Philly series are my top 10 playoff series of all time. I mean, they're great.
Wow.
I love the Charlotte series. The Charlotte series was, you know, down 3-2 going to Charlotte and down over 20 points in the game, and Charlotte come back and win that. And then just win a war, a seventh game. I don't think the score ever got higher than, and it, no one ever led by more than like 6 or 7 points. Really close game and really well fought game and well coached game. And we figured out how to win it.
Yeah.
And then Philly was, you know, I mean, I'm a little bit of a conspiracy, you know, that we didn't get any foul calls. We fought through the referee and all the whole time and almost pulled that off too.
I know it was their second year together, I believe, is like a big three, but they're trying, you know, Sam was a vet, but you have Ray and Glenn. So how did you see the three of them try to work, and you and your staff try to work them, right, to get it to kind of flow together and be successful?
All three of them have different personalities. I mean, Sam's a point guard, doesn't like to practice, but really likes to play. Very smart, very, very great basketball feel and IQ. Not a great point guard passer, but a pretty damn good point guard thinker. You know, he's not a creative, he's not a guy who's going to go out and get 17 assists in a game, but he understands why the game, what's going on in the game.
Okay.
And Ray, you know, Ray was the most talented shooter I've ever coached, and we just wanted to get him free and loose and let him fire. And he got better. I mean, I really enjoyed him that year. I mean, that's, I don't know if he made an all-star team that year or next year, but I thought he and Glenn were, I mean, Glenn was a mid-range shooter more than a three-point shooter. Ray was, what we want to consider, one of the top 5 three-point shooters of all time. And so I think all that stuff worked out for us. And then having Tim Thomas off your bench, Irvin Johnson, the Fed. I thought Scotty Williams had a great year for us. And it just, the momentum of the season came our way, and we took advantage of it.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned a few times your bench guys, and obviously, I mean, you don't win 50-plus games without most of the squad, right?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I just thought Scott and Irvin coming off their bench, and I mean, Scotty played from the starting position a lot too, but you know, Mark Pope starting was basically because I wanted to say, hey, we got to play some defense. You know, we got to make it some defense. And Mark was one of those hustle, blue collar guys that gave you, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of tough defense and good offensive rebounding and perfect game plan, you know, focus. Those things were, I think, a way of me telling the rest of the guys, you got to be more like them. Because he can't be like you, but you got to be more like him.
The Charlotte series, it's kind of forgotten with what happened in Philly.
I think you always grow up, and I thought that series is where my team really grew up. And that series, and then we had the confidence to beat Philadelphia, even though we didn't do it. You know, we thought we were as good or better than Philly.
That game 6 suspension, and the way you guys heard about it, does it for you still feel like something was I don't want to say taken, but like you weren't allowed to play It wasn't decided on the court, I guess.
In the league office, there was a big negative energy bomb. I mean, it's just, it kind of, you know, and you could, on the plane, you could hear everybody kind of, you know, on a, they're on a high playing in a game seven in Philly, playing better than Philly's playing right now. The momentum was on our side. And it just seemed like it, the air went out of that momentum. And we had to regroup. And, you know, and then when Ray Allen sprains his ankle, and we all kind of, like, I'm not saying we panicked, but we were in the mode of, what the f***?
Yeah.
And we never could get offensively back on track after Ray got hurt.
Yeah.
And not having Scotty's not a great offensive player, but he gave us a confidence that was taken away from us also. It was just weird. I mean, you know, it magnified that conspiracy theory that, you know, the league wanted the big stars and they wanted the big markets in the finals. And then the disparity in referee calls and free throws was unbelievable. I hear it's the greatest discrepancy ever in NBA conference final. But they shot, I don't know, something like 100 more free throws than we shot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's just, but, you know, in the same sense, to do it on your airplane on the way to Philly, and then Ray Allen sprained his ankle early in, I think, the first quarter or second. I think second quarter he sprained his ankle. It just blew our bubble as the game was going on, rather than getting beat fairly, you know. As the game goes on, and all of a sudden, you know, and I look back on the coaching. I started Darvin Ham, and deep down inside, I wish I would have started Tim Thomas. I should have started Tim Thomas. I needed more offense, especially when Ray went down. I needed more offense in the game.
Yeah, it's, you're right, George. It was they had one. They shot 66 more free throws. That's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Over seven games. That's a ton of game. No, I'll always remember that year. That year of the standing ovations as I walked into the court was humbling and exhilarating. I mean, it was amazing. And then the streets were amazing. The streets were fun, and the music and the dancing and the afternoon games. It was just a beautiful day, a beautiful year.
There was Jim chatting with George Karl, head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks back in 2001. Jim, I think most people remember the, you know, conspiracy of the 2001 season somewhat tongue-in-cheek. Like, I think most fans understand David Stern, the league wasn't actually trying to get Philadelphia into the NBA Finals because it was a bigger market or something. But, you know, I talked to Darvin Ham a couple years ago, and got his thoughts on it, and you said, you know, you talked to Scott Williams and Carl. Like, I don't know if the players or coaches, like, completely rule it out. I'm sure they don't think that David Stern actively was looking for ways to screw with the Bucks. But I also think that I get the sense that maybe the Bucks weren't taken as seriously, and so maybe it wasn't, you know, maybe the Scott Williams thing wasn't looked at quite closely enough by the league office. I don't know. From what you know about that season and how Bucks fans remember that season, what would you say to that? Do you think there's any room whatsoever that the league made a huge mistake here and just didn't give Milwaukee Bucks the time of day?
Oh, man. Yeah, like, there's a part of me that just feels like officiating, like it's a crutch. But, man, JR, I mean, you mentioned Darvin Ham. I mean, George talks about it. We're going to catch up with Scott, and that he has not let that go. We'll tease that one. That's less of an interview, is rather just like Scott picked up the phone. I mentioned game six and then off he went for 10 minutes, which is fascinating. But, you know, Ray Allen went on to be part of a couple other super teams and big threes, and that still bothers him. Like, man, I don't know. You know, George Karl still remembered, I mean, we said in that interview, you know, 60 plus more free throws over a period of seven games. I mean, that's a lot when you talk about a team with Glenn Robinson and Ray Allen and Sam Cassell and Tim Thomas, who was so good. Like the numbers and the action of the league, like match their feelings, right? Like they're not incongruent, you know? And yeah, it's a superstar league. And look, you know, Giannis has elevated the Bucks to a different stratosphere by winning MVP. Ray Allen, Glenn Robinson, Sam Cassell were not those guys. You know, Ray Allen became an all-star. Glenn and Sam weren't. They were like fringy. And it's fun to talk about them as like the big three. But, you know, in terms of the context of like how that's viewed now, I mean, they kind of weren't, you know?
Yeah, it was the best of what was around for Milwaukee sports.
Man, I don't know. It's I get it. AI, Dikembe Mutombo against Shaq and Kobe, like, you know, David Stern's NBA was you know, man, I grew up in Chicago, JR. Like, those were good Bucks teams that lost to the Pistons and the 76ers and the Bulls. But it was the same kind of level, like, right? Marcus Johnson and Sidney Moncrief, like those guys were a step above, like as actual, like multi-time all-stars, as actual, like defensive players of the year. They were a step above Glenn and Sam and Ray, right? But yet I think even then, Paul Pressey versus Magic? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I don't think those teams stuck, you know, measured up against those Celtics 76ers teams and the Bulls, but I think that started then in Stearns. I don't know, man. I guess it's a long way for me to say I get it. And I don't know if they're wrong for feeling like how do you justify 60 free throws? Like those are official calls, right? Like how do you I don't know, man. And I'm from afar. I didn't live it, you know. I didn't feel that pain. And so I can understand those who did live it and do feel it.
Yeah, and let's give a little more context so that people know why Scott Williams was suspended. He had accrued a certain amount of points for flagrant fouls over the course of the playoffs. So he knocks down Allen Iverson. In the moment, it's not registered as anything more than a foul. But then Stu Jackson, the vice president in the NBA, goes back, reassesses it as a flagrant, and that tips Williams over into too many points, too many flagrant foul points, during the course of the playoffs, with the punishment being a game suspension. Happens to be game 7. And David Stern, to his credit, I think, just, and maybe this is just NBA basketball in general, but really good at making the stars, like you're talking about, the centerpiece of this league. I mean, everybody, whether or not they were a basketball fan or not, knew certainly who Michael Jordan was and Magic Johnson and Larry Bird and everybody there, but also like Hakeem Olajuwon and some of these other players that were, you know, maybe not top crust, but were still excellent Hall of Fame players. People knew who these guys were. And yeah, the Bucks maybe didn't have those guys. And Allen Iverson was certainly one of those guys. The Bucks, in this case, did not have a comparable player. So I think there's a feeling that David Stern, in emphasizing the thing that made this league great, the individual superstars, you know, maybe gave a little more favor to Allen Iverson than necessary. And that maybe was reflected in the whistles. You know, maybe that culture permeates down to the referees and they're just simply more forgiving to the team that has the star and the team that is maybe a big market, quote unquote, a big market team. So the other thing to know, I think, for this team, one of the reasons it endures so much is that it was sort of a shooting star. I mean, I said the teams leading up to that year were good. That might be overstating it a little bit. I mean, both of the teams the 2 years before had gone to the playoffs, lost in the first round. That was a 42-40 team in 1999-2000. They rocket up to a 52-win team that goes to the Eastern Conference Finals. And then the next year, they don't go to the playoffs. They're 500 again. You know, and then in George Karl's last year, again, they lose in the first round of the playoffs. They're barely above 500. They're 500 the year after that, the first year under Terry Porter. I mean, this team did not win a playoff series between 1989 and 2001. So, and then again, from 2001 to, what was it, 2018 or 2019 postseason, I think. Yeah, 2019. So it was such an oasis in the middle of this barren wasteland. I mean, I think I said that once already, but that's what it was. So to think that the Bucks fans got that one shot and then it got taken out from them, you know, perceptively, I think that's why it endures. It really sticks in their craw. But like, the teams that Giannis is on are much better, much more talented than the 2001 team. That goes without saying. Like, they are not anywhere in the ballpark. My fear is that the team that goes to the finals in 2018-19 will be the one that people remember from this Bucks run. If they don't get back there or get to an NBA Finals, it's going to be the same thing. Remember that year they were up 2-0 against the Raptors, and not that it was a conspiracy or anything, but that they fizzled out from there. Like, that would be a concern I have going forward for the Giannis era Bucks. But the fact of the matter is, these teams are so much better than the late 90s, early 2000s Bucks teams. I don't know how history will remember it. Obviously, that depends on what comes next. But that to me is some of the context around why 2001 matters so much to Bucks fans.
Yeah, and I think that's why it matters so much to even the guys who are on those teams. You know, Scott Williams, it's funny, people are like, if they're doing a quick basketball reference search, they'll find out he's just kind of this role player. And it was more than that. I mean, that team was the truly a sum greater than its individual parts, you know. And George said it there. Like, it just dealt them such a blow when they were told, how they were told, how they were constructed, you know, with the other guy. And we're going to get into this. So yeah, we teased the Scott Williams interview. We don't know when we're going to – obviously, the 50th anniversary stuff's coming up. The Bucks may yet play the 76ers again, JR, in an Eastern Conference Finals. So, we're definitely going to touch more on this as time goes on and maybe hear from some of those other players, whether it be on this pod or in print. But the overriding feeling is they felt they weren't given the chance to lose – fairly. And I've heard this said many, many times. You can't tell people how to feel, right? Like, however facts are presented or things are presented that makes you feel a certain way, and that's how they feel. And whether it be Bucks fans or George Karl or the guys involved, they feel like they were robbed. Even after all these years, and for other guys like Sam Cassell, Scott Williams, Ray Allen, who have rings, I think it says something that it bothers them that team, that shooting star in Milwaukee, was maybe shot down before it could reach its apex.
Yeah, we're 3 weeks away from the 20th year anniversary of the start of those 2000-2001 playoffs. So like Jim said, we'll have Scott Williams on next, maybe next week, maybe not quite next week, but I'm not sure. I think so, right? Why not next week with Scott Williams?
Yeah, let's hit it next week. We are, other than the Giannis injury, JR, I think we've hit kind of a dog day stretch here of Bucks games where it's either, you know, kind of coasting in to make sure Giannis is healthy, or and not quite yet to those fun moments of, I mean, look, do you really want us to break down the Magic game? So maybe Scott will. So maybe we'll give you guys some fun listens before we really get hardcore into, you know, 76ers, Nets, Suns, all that good stuff at the end of the year.
Yeah, Bucks play Dallas on Friday night. Like you said, that is a back-to-back coming home to face the Hornets. That is the closest competitor to them as we record this on Thursday in the Eastern Conference standings in fourth place, but down quite a way, six games back. Charlotte at the Pfizer Forum, sorry for that unnecessary article there. That would be an 8 o'clock tip on Saturday, or I should say Friday night, and then Sunday, the Bucks against the Orlando Magic. As you mentioned, first-round foe in 2001, first-round foe last year. Not sure if they're going to, you know, come anywhere close to the playoffs this year, but still, the Bucks will be traveling to Orlando to face the Magic on Sunday, April 11th. Jim, we'll be talking to you next week.
Yep, sounds good. Talk to you then.
Find everything he has at jsonline.com. Again, you can check us out on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review, and let us know what you think. Find us on Twitter. I'm JR Radcliffe, at JR Radcliffe. That's with an E on the end. He's Jim Ozarski, at Jim Ozarski, Ozarski. You should know how to spell this by now. Thanks for joining us. We'll chat with you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.